Let's continue our story of the end of Israel's first civil war. The text I want you to go to is 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse number 12. It's about 2 years after the death of King Saul. David is ruling over the house of Judah, over the tribe of Judah, and any Israelis from elsewhere that have kind of moved into his territory, while the kingdom of Saul is being ruled over by his surviving son Ishbaal from the fortified city of Mahanaim in Gilead. Abner, the cousin of the late king and the commander of the military forces of Israel, moved everybody over there, moved the kingdom's headquarters over there from Gibeah after the Battle of Mount Gilboa. And so they've been fighting back and forth for 2 years now. And David's forces are getting stronger. More and more people are ditching the whole allegiance to the Ishbaal throne and pledging their allegiance to King David, the anointed of God. And right at this moment, we have a fracture in the relationship between Abner, the commander of the Israeli forces, and Ishbaal, the king of Israel. Ishbaal accuses Abner of sleeping with his late father's concubine, Rizpah. And this really puts Abner off, especially since he's really the power behind the throne. He has all of the support of the Israeli commanders and leaders. And he's the only reason that Ishbaal has stayed on the throne this long. So he reacts very strongly and says, God, do more to me if I don't turn this kingdom over to David. Which he proceeds to do. He reaches out to David and says, the kingdom belongs to you. We all know that. You're God's choice. I want to make arrangements to do that. And so David is all on board with it. And he makes one big requirement. He wants his first wife, Michal, brought to him. Now, Michal's already been remarried. Her dad, the king, Saul, had forcibly divorced her from David 4 years earlier, 3.5 years earlier, and remarried her to somebody else. So she's moved on in her life, but David is insistent. He wants her back. And so Abner agrees to this condition. So we read that, verse 12, Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf. To whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me. Behold, my hand shall be with you to bring over all Israel to you. He said, good, I'll make a covenant with you, but one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. So David sent messengers to Ishbaal, Saul's son. Now, this could be surprising because I thought the arrangement was with Abner, you might say. Why is David having any contact with Ishbaal? I suspect, cannot prove it, but I suspect that at this point, Ishbaal sees the handwriting on the wall and realizes he is going to have to step down from the throne and hand it over to David because he doesn't have the support of the commander of the armies anymore. And so I believe that David expands his arrangement beyond the commander, Abner, to Ishbaal himself and says, you need to give me Michal. Now remember, Michal is Ishbaal's little sister. So give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. And so Ishbaal sent and took her from her husband Paltiel, the son of Laish, which means he basically forced her to divorce her second husband. And then he's going to send her back to her original husband, David. But her husband went with her, weeping after her all the way to Bahurim. And then Abner said to him, go return. And so he returned. So there is a forced divorce, and there's going to be, and I'm going to use this word advisedly, forced remarriage of Michal. She is being bounced back and forth in the middle of all this political craziness. And she is not going to be happy about it. And I think that plays into a story that comes up later. Because let's think about this for a moment. You might be able to ask the question easily on behalf of Michal, why didn't David rescue her? Why didn't he try to get her snuck out of Gibeah and out of the palace in the months that followed her helping him to sneak out and go on the run? And we don't know. We don't know why that's the case. But she may have held in her heart some hope that that would happen, because I really believe she was genuinely in love with him and he with her. But think also about this. After she is forced to divorce David and marry this other guy and start a new life, she finds out that her husband, former husband David, who's on the run, has remarried. Not just once, not just twice, but 3, 4, 5, eventually 6 times that we read about. And then now, here we are, 4 years after she saw him, he demands that she be divorced from her current husband of probably 3.5 years and be brought back to him into this setting of the kingdom of Judah, where she is among other women that he's married to. One more thing to think about. There is no evidence anywhere that she and David have any children at this point. It seems as if Michal must not have been able to have babies when they were first married. And like I said, they were probably married for possibly as much as 10 years before everything blew up. And she doesn't have any children with this next guy either. And so all of this is probably weighing on her, and I think we should keep that in mind, the circumstances of her life, when an event happens later. So I'm just kind of prepping you for that. We have to let the reality of the text speak to us. Verse 17. Back to Abner. Abner conferred with the elders of Israel. Now these would be the tribal leaders, saying, for some time past, you have been seeking David as king over you. Now that tells us that even though Abner has been upholding the legitimacy of Ishbaal being the king of Israel because he is the surviving son of Saul, other people in the kingdom of prominence have been telling him that they would rather have David. And so he's been dealing with that reality for 2 years. And so now he comes back to him about it. Verse 18, now then, bring it about. For he who is has promised David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies. Now, that means Abner is aware of prophetic utterances about David. And so it is only loyalty to the family that caused him to put Ishbaal on the throne at Mahanaim and to support him for the last 2 years. And so now he's finally coming to this reality. He's fighting God. And so he's going to stop it. So he tells these elders of Israel, let's do it. Verse 19, Abner also spoke to Benjamin. So he's not just simply talking to all the tribes of Israel, but he's talking to the tribe of Benjamin in particular, because they are of the tribe of Saul. And of all the tribes, they are going to be the ones most likely to have this allegiance to the tribe. My side, right or wrong. And so he wants to convince everyone this is the best thing. So Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do. So at this point, it sounds as if the vast majority of the leadership in Israel, in all those other tribes, including, I think, the resignation of Ishbaal himself, is that David is going to be the king of United Israel. Verse 20, Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron. And David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. So David is happy to have him. He's happy that he brought Michal with him, because he did. And that the agreement of the tribal leaders up in the north is that we'll all be one kingdom again. Abner said to David, I will arise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. So after the big meal, Abner says, okay, I'm going to head back north now, and we're going to make the arrangements to gather together at a special place, maybe the tabernacle, maybe it would have been at Gilgal, maybe it would have been up at Shechem. You know, the place where the blessing and the cursing ceremony took place. But somewhere special, all the tribes are going to get together and anoint David as king over United Israel. And so David's good with that. David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Just then, the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid. Now, they're continuing to carry on military operations against other enemies of Israel. Remember, the Philistines are always a problem. The Ammonites, sometimes a problem. So Joab's been away on military maneuvers, military operation for a few days, maybe a few weeks, and he knows nothing about everything we've just been reading about a peace treaty and an arrangement to bring the kingdom back together under David. Knows nothing about that. Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he'd sent him away, and he'd gone in peace. And when Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king. He's let him go. He's gone in peace. Now, the reason I'm saying that with this exaggerated emotion is that some of the people are still angry at Abner for killing Joab, Joab's younger brother, Asahel. That only happened a couple of years ago. And Joab and Abishai, the two surviving brothers, have apparently made a big deal out of the fact that they're going to track down Abner and they're going to kill him for killing their brother. They've made this a personal thing. And so when they find out that their uncle, King David, has made a peace treaty with the man they hate with a passion, they are furious. Verse 24, Joab went into the king and said, "What have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you've sent him away so that he's gone? You know that Abner the son of Ner came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you're doing." So Joab accuses David of being naive, that this is all a ploy, that the only thing that Abner is at here is that he's pulling a fast one on you. He's doing a con job on you so that he can find out how to take you down. That's all he's after. Now, that is not the case. We know the whole story from the inspired writing here. Abner seems to be very sincere in this whole process. Verse 26. When Joab came out from David's presence, so as soon as he got done venting his spleen, yelling at the king, which is amazing, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah. But David did not know about it, and that has to be stressed. So it's apparently the day, and Abner has not traveled very far by the time that Joab arrives. And so he immediately sends out a fast runner to tell Abner, "You need to come back. There needs to be a conference still, more information." So verse 27, when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab is the one that met him, and he took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. Now you have to picture this being very covert. Here comes Abner back to Hebron. He arrives at the gate. There is Joab that he knows. And Joab says, "I need to talk to you privately." Now, Abner thinks that everything has been resolved, that there is a peace treaty and that everybody's going to be able to move on now. But that's not what happens. As soon as he takes him aside, it says he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asael, his brother. So he basically assassinates him. He stabs him in the gut. Verse 28, afterward, when David heard of it, which of course he will, he said, "I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before he who is for the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and all upon all his house, his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge," meaning make them unclean, "or who has leprous, marked by God, or who holds a spindle," meaning some form of slavery, sounds like, or low-skilled, low-paid job, "or who falls by the sword," meaning exactly that, who dies in battle, who dies in some sort of conflict, "or who lacks bread." So a whole bunch of bad things. This is an imprecatory psalm that he's uttering. It's just very, very small, very short. He puts a curse on him because, let's make no bones about it, Joab murdered Abner. Now, I believe Abner didn't intend to kill Asahel, and it was in battle. But I don't believe he murdered him. And so Joab is in the wrong here. And David portrays it as that. Verse 30, here's what the writer says. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner. So this is where we find out that Abishai was also involved in it. And you might remember, Abishai is the guy that suggested to David, "You don't have to kill Saul. I'll do it for you. I'll pin him to ground with his own spear. I'll only need to make one stroke and he'll be gone." So these guys are quite, quite lethal in their attitudes toward their perceived enemies. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle at Gibeon. And then David said to Joab and all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourn before Abner." So he puts out the order for all the people in Hebron, any of the people of Judah that might be nearby that could attend to this next part of the story. "I want everybody showing their grief over the death of Abner, the commander of the armies of Israel." Because that's what he had been. He had been the commander ever since the time his cousin came to power 22 years earlier. So this is a 22-year general in his general position. And so he is due the grief that comes at his death. And David even tells Joab specifically, "You will put on sackcloth. You will tear your clothes. You will show public mourning for this man." Now, you might ask the question at this point, and it will be answered later in Scripture, but I'll answer it to you now. Why didn't David bring Joab up on charges and have him executed? And the answer is because Joab is a powerful person in his own right. He has been King David's commander for the last 2 years of the kingdom of Hebron, the kingdom of Judah. And before that, he had been on the run with David and been one of his top guys. And before that, he had been in the Israeli army as well. And so he has a lot of people that are beholding to him. And David is afraid of those guys, that if he were to bring Joab up on charges and execute him for murder, that he would have those people to contend with. And he does not want to deal with that right now. Back to the story. King David followed the bier, which is the fancy word for the stretcher or the coffin that's bearing the body of Abner from the place where it was prepared for burial to the place of burial. Then they buried Abner at Hebron. Now, I don't know where at Hebron. We know that the tombs of the patriarchs and the matriarchs are at Hebron, and that there was probably a cemetery around that same general vicinity as well. And so I think he may have been given a special place not very far from the grave of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. "The king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, 'Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered. As one falls before the wicked, you've fallen,'" which is the way he's expressing the murder here. This is definitely a slap at Joab, that Abner was assassinated by someone that didn't even face him in some sort of combat situation. He just took him aside covertly, privately, and when the guy didn't expect anything, stabbed him. Not right. And so David laments over him, and all the people wept again over him. And then all the people came to persuade David to eat while it was yet day, because David is fasting over this very sad situation. But David swore, saying, "God do so to me and more also if I taste bread or anything else till the sun goes down." So I am fasting this entire day of mourning. And all the people took notice of it, and it pleased them, as everything that the king did pleased all the people. And so all the people in all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. And so this is the beginning of understanding that David was not complicit in this. He was not personally involved in the death of Saul. He is not personally involved in the death of Saul's cousin, the commander of Saul's army. And everybody understands that because of the way he's reacting and commenting here. And the king said to his servants, "Do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel?" Because remember, David served with this guy. They may have fought side by side, back to back, many, many times. "I was gentle today, though anointed king. These men, the sons of Zeruiah, are more severe than I. He who is, repay the evildoer according to his wickedness." So David vents here, cries out to his inner circle of helpers, the people on his personal staff, seems like, that "I tried to do the right thing to patch things up, but these nephews of mine, my sister's sons, just couldn't let it go. May God deal with them as he sees fit." And so he lets God be the one that will take care of this situation. But the story's not over yet, because the next event that happens is something that David has to distance himself from as well. Mark your place. We'll get into that story the next time we're into the Word.